All right, so let's start. I think we get everybody online. All right, the sound is okay. 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 Jim, are you okay with that? Any follow-up points? Are there any sources on that?
Midrash Mishlei 25:1 and Avot by Natan 1:2.
All right, so maybe if you can, you know, after the class, just email that to me. I'll take a look.
Okay. Okay, and then for the other sources for the story that we're talking about, for sure, they talk about Shabbat 30b and
Okay.
Oh no, Hulin 57B in regards to the ant having a ruler. And whether or not Proverbs needs it as divine or not. So that's a little bit different issue. But so there are at least three different sources they're talking about here.
Okay. They don't quote the case in Bava Basra? Talmud Bava Basra? Because that's what I was quoting from. That's the Talmud that goes into who wrote down which books. Joshua wrote down his book, Moses wrote down the five books, and it goes through which prophets wrote down, you know, what books. And then they explains over there that Chizkiyahu is the one who was attributed to writing down King Solomon's works. All right, so you'll send me that. I'll take a look. We'll pursue it.
All right.
Okay. All right, so we're up to the last few verses in Koheles. And we're in 12:8. So we said... We read 12:8. Havel Havelam, futility of futilities, did the Koheles say? I mean, the one who gathered together much learning. I think Jim, as you mentioned, and that's what Rashi says as well. And he says all is futile. Now, the reason why he's saying that, because this is now on the heels of his warning to a person that of the previous verse. That the dust will turn back to the earth, to the land, meaning that man's body will disintegrate, it will return back to the earth, like it was, and the spirit will return to God. Meaning to say that there's no real location, there's no relocation of something which is not physical. The spirit of a person does not occupy space. But what it means that it returns to God, it means to give a judgment, an ultimate judgment for the person's life. So the spirit will return, will be assessed by God who gave it. And because of that, that's why he says the next verse, which is 12:8, that all is futile. Meaning unless something is really targeting the ultimate goal, which is what Sforno said. So then the physical really is futile. And he's trying to get a person to recognize that you see that the person himself doesn't stay long. So why invest energy into anything else, which is temporal, that doesn't contribute to your eternal riches? Which is what he says further on, to your eternal, the eternality of your soul. So you see how it's connected, that because a person's lifespan is brief, and he returns, and his ultimate life is not in the physical, so the person should then weigh his value of the physical world and realize that unless it's contributing to his eternal good, to his soul, so it's futile. Any pursuit would be futile. A person who's amassing all the wealth that he never spends, that would be a great case of a futility of the physical world. Okay. Now, interesting is how he starts off the next verse. The next verse, he starts off by saying, and more than this. Now, what is, and more than this? We have to understand. Well, let's read the whole verse. He says, and more than this, or in addition, it was that Koheles, that King Solomon, was very wise. He was a chacham. He was a wise person. Furthermore, he taught knowledge to the nation, and he caused them to hear and to deliberate, and he constructed many metaphors. Meaning, according to Sforno, to that end, since he was very wise, so then he taught the people much, meaning he recognized he was greater than, and I'll read you the Sforno now. Well, let's still come back to the first word of this verse. What does it mean, in addition to this? What do you mean, in addition to what? How do you start off a verse like that? He was talking about how being everything futile. So, well, let's take that now. See, when he says that previously in 12:8 that all is futile, then he says in 12:9 and additionally, so what do you mean in addition? Meaning further on this point, since everything is futile, if it doesn't contribute to the real purpose of the person's soul, knowledge of God, and the greatest joy that he has here and in the next world, so because of that, he was a great wise person, and he taught the nation wisdom. Meaning, since this was the truth, since after all is said and done, chasing after all these physical considerations and temporal petty concerns, therefore he wanted to educate the people about this. Okay, so that's what it means in addition. On top of the fact, meaning to compound the point that the physical world is not to be pursued as it ends in itself. Therefore, to compound that, being that Koheles was a wise individual, he taught the people. All right, so now I'll read you Sforno, and he puts it together very smoothly. He says, in addition, that Koheles was wise, and Sforno then says on that, his commentary, and with that, that he was a greater intellect and more, he had more wisdom and greater wisdom than other wise people of his generation. So therefore, further, he taught the people. What does it mean that further he taught the people? He said he further strove more than them, than other wise people, to teach knowledge. So what does it mean? Since he was wiser than anybody else, he strove more to teach the people. Evidently, he saw that he had wisdom that other people couldn't impart. And this is not something that he can keep to himself. He realized that he had this wisdom, and the wisdom is not, God's will is not just that one person should be wise, but as many people as possible. So because he saw this wisdom, he saw that he had this, and he was humble, but he was also realistic. He saw that he had wisdom that he could impart to the people that nobody else could. Therefore, he strove to teach them, to make them hear, and to make them think, deliberate. Chikar means that they had to analyze, use reasoning, to really do an analysis of the Torah, because it's not a simple matter. And he says also that he created many metaphors. And we touched on this last week about a metaphor being essential. If whoever has, if you just put on your mute buttons, I'm getting feedback here, all right? Thanks. So a metaphor is essential if you're trying to bring a person into a new area of knowledge. So you can't use concepts that they're not familiar with yet. You have to use terminology and figures that make sense to a person. So if you want to talk about a very large appetite, so you may tell a person, I'm so hungry I can eat a horse. So if you're going to try to teach that to a child, he's going to be bewildered because he's very literal at that point. You can't put a horse in your mouth. So you'll talk about things that are big, and you'll give examples to the child until he understands that large doesn't just mean big in size. Large can also can relate to a concept. And he starts moving away from just large. I mean, a big horse just means a large thing in terms of size. The dimensions, that's what a child thinks large is. Until you start showing what large can mean, that I'm very, just like a horse is very big, so you can teach the child that my hunger is very big. And he starts to understand very as being an offshoot or a modification or an interpretation of the word large. So large doesn't also always just mean size, it can mean very. So then the person understands from his own reservoir of knowledge, things that he's familiar with, he could now make a step. So that's what a metaphor is used for, in order to bring a person to an area that they don't have the concepts yet. So you call on figures that they're familiar with, and you could go step by step. So that's the first thing that we're being taught over here, that King Solomon, since he had this wisdom, and he had it, and it shows a concern for the people also, by the fact that he saw the wisdom and he wanted to teach them. So that's what Kohelet, that's why Sforno says, he strove more than them, the other wise people of his generation, to teach the people knowledge. And he then goes again, he comments on the words, he caused them to hear and to analyze. So Sforno says, this is referring to the Torah. Those paths that the person can hear and to analyze the words of the earlier sages. So it could be referring to the prophets, because Solomon was one of the earliest. So evidently there were King David, and there were wise people, there were the patriarchs and Moses. So King Solomon wanted to give people a way to understand, because there's such depth. And he also created many metaphors. And Sforno says in that, to break the ear open, meaning to cause a person to hear new ideas. As they state that King Solomon wrote 3,000 metaphors. Okay. So it's showing you the concern that he had, and that he strove a lot to teach the people. But he had to get them first to hear the ideas. But it's not just hearing the ideas, there has to be an analysis. Otherwise the ideas, the real depth of Torah would not be found. And in order, and the means that he did it was through creating metaphors. Right, and you know that he wrote the whole book called Proverbs. So Proverbs really is not the right translation. It should really be called Metaphors. Because in Hebrew it's Mishle. Mishle is the word mushel, metaphor. Because proverb doesn't have to be cloaked. A proverb is a brief statement that gives wisdom to a person. You could have a proverb that's like, you know, the early bird catches the worm. So they're giving, there it's a metaphor. They're using a bird in place of a person. Or you could have a proverb where one in the hand is worth two in the bush. So that's literal. I mean, if you have one bird in your hand, that's worth more than two birds that are in the bush, because the two birds in the bush are not caught yet. So that means you have zero in your hand. So to have one bird caught already, I mean, the person's going hunting, he wants to have dinner. So to use, you know, whoever wrote this, they wrote it, you know, based on the times. The person would hunt down their own food, evidently. So basically the idea is that a sure thing that's small is worth more than a chancier thing that you don't even have anything yet. So there's literal. But that's what a proverb is when you're giving over an idea, a saying. It doesn't have to be cloaked. But a metaphor, by definition, is. Okay, so there's a difference between a proverb and a metaphor. Okay. Now, you know, I did wonder as I was reading through this if there was anything more to this. The fact that it says it's giving a bit of a narration on King Solomon's intent. And I'm not sure if he wrote this himself or this was something that Hizkiah wrote as a comment on King Solomon. But you see, at the beginning of the book, he does give information about what the purpose is. And King Solomon says, let's see. Oh, no, I'm sorry, I'm confusing that with Mishlei. Mishlei, he talks about that. In order to understand the words of the wise, then the riddles, that's the meaning of Mishlei. Here he goes into, as Rabbi Chait explained, the beginning of Kahelis is about a analysis of the human psyche, and how energy works, and how a person works. In order to understand what's good for a person, you first have to discuss what the design of the human being is. You have to know all the parts, all the components. Once you know the components, you know there's energy, there's libido, there's drive, there's desire, there's ambition, there's dissatisfaction, there's the feeling of immortality. Once all the broad strokes are painted, then and only then can a person understand what's going to be good for, you know, such a being. But at the end, we see that it's giving a bit of a narration in terms of the praise of King Solomon. So I'm just wondering why. I don't have an answer, but it is a question. But it says further. It says further in verse 10. Also, a continuation on this theme. That Kohelis, 12:10, that Kohelis sought to find words that were desirable, pleasing expressions. And he wrote things that are upright and words of truth. He wrote matters of what is upright for a person, moral concepts, and also truths. Those are the two areas, like Maimonides breaks down in the beginning of the Guide for the Perplexed, that there's two areas of knowledge that a person is engaged in. Things that are true and false, and that's what Adam was involved in. There was no morality, he was naked, there was no concern, there was no embarrassment because there was no such thing as a conscience yet. So when a person's conscience is not in existence, so all you have that's operating is the intelligence. What is true and what is false. There's no concept of what's right or what's wrong. That cannot exist in a being. For example, an animal. An animal does not have any concept of right or wrong. It doesn't have a concept to begin with. All an animal functions on is the way it's designed instinctually. So there's no intelligence and there's no morality. It only has the third component, which is purely instinct, which a person also has. But before God gave the conscience to a person, to Adam and Eve, so that's why it says they were both naked and they weren't embarrassed. Because they were only involved in the higher level of knowledge, understanding what's true about the world, what's false. Afterwards, of course, they were given the conscience as a means to slow down the energies into what would be destructive. So by having a conscience, a person, before he does something harmful, he might feel bad about it now before he does it. That's like a secondary brake system to slow a person down and to stop them before they might do something destructive to themselves, to others. So that's the two areas that a person is involved in today in terms of thought. Not only what's true and what's false in terms of understanding science and truth of what God created, but then there's morality, what's right and wrong. That's a whole different area. Right, again, if you could just put on your mute button, so I'm getting feedback. Hello? Everybody have the mute on? Okay. Okay, so you see now that this verse 10 is saying that we understand in verse 9 that he was wise, and therefore, because of that, Sforno says, since he was wiser than anybody, he strove more to teach. That's what it says in the verse. He taught the people much. But also he tried to do it in a way that would be most palatable. That's what it says in 10. And he addressed both areas. Morality, what's yosher, what's upright, morality, and also truths. Now he says something interesting. He says in 11, let me see if Sforno says anything on this. Okay. No. Right, so Ibn Ezra says in this, what does it mean Koheles sought to teach words of truth, of good, that would be desirous words? This is the highest level of knowledge. Until he would find out the matter, what purpose is there for this thing in creation? And why was this thing created? I mean, to find the ultimate definition of something, you have to see what the purpose is in this thing that it was created. Why was it created this way as well? Still getting a lot of feedback. Could everybody just put on the mute buttons, please? Thank you. Okay. And again, you know, it still is bothersome. So what is this summation of these verses at the end of his book? What is the purpose of telling us this? Let's think about that, but let's look at the next verse. Interesting verse, 11. The words of the wise are like, they're like goads. It's some sort of a rivet or a piece of metal that's part of the plow that steers the animal this way or that way. And they're like nails that are firmly, piled in, driven in, like firmly driven nails. Now some say that the next word means the gatherer of many things, Balei Asufas. What do you have there in the English for the next words, Jim?
Given from one shepherd.
That's the last part, right before that, after the nails.
With large head.
Okay, good. So that's what I believe is the right statement. That's what Sforno goes on, meaning the words of the wise are like, they're like goads. That's something which steers an animal left or right in the plow. And they're like nails that are driven, but they have heads. A nail has a head on it. Now, what is he telling you the structure of a nail for? And then it's given from one shepherd. So there's a lot in this verse. So we really have to slow down here and understand what is this verse doing here, and what is the understanding of the verse? So, of course, to know why the verse is here, we first have to understand the verse. We have to go in reverse order of my question. So what is he bringing in now? Let's understand. The words of the wise, they're like goads that they drive the animal left or right, and like nails that are firmly planted. They're netuim, firmly drilled in. So how is the word of the wise like these things? And how are they like nails with had the heads on the top. Okay, it's true. A goad will guide the animal, and it's not pleasant for the animal. That may be true.
I find myself troubled by, in the previous verse, it says, Koheleth thought to find words of delight, but now they seem to be, a goat doesn't seem to be delightful.
Well, that's in the previous verse, right? That's talking about what he wrote. Then he talks about in 11 the words of the wise, meaning not Koheleth. It seems to be talking about somebody else. Otherwise, why not address it as being the words of Koheleth? So 10 is saying that Koheleth sought to find words that were well received. So therefore, he wrote down matters of morality and matters of truth. Then it says the words of the wise are like goads and like well-driven nails with large heads. Right? So seems to be is not referring to Koheleth.
But isn't he wise?
Yeah, but it would use his name if it was talking about Koheleth. It said that in verse 8 and in verse 10 they refer to him. So if it wants to continue talking about him, they would use it again. Well, it's not large heads, but nails that have heads, yeah.
Oh, nails that have heads are easier to draw than just nails that are like rods. So that's the only difference. They're easier, there's more surface area. You can hit it with a hammer easier and not slip off.
Okay. There's also one other thing that those things are helpful for, that the heads of the nail are helpful for. Nope.
Yeah, the pressure of the wood usually holds the nail in. It shows up where the nail is, and it doesn't let it sink below the surface.
Okay, there's still one more thing. Still one more thing that has a purpose for.
The large head of the nail?
Yeah.
Maybe to hold them, to know which end to put in.
No, I think it's pretty intuitive.
The other end is sharpened.
Right, so you know.
The rabbi, so I guess I give up.
All right, well, I think you'll...
Mercy, I give up.
Rabbi, isn't the nail easier to remove with a large head, too, so you can place it in a more...
That's right. That's exactly what Sforno says, and I'll read it to you. He says that the words of the wise are like driven nails. So he says they make the person upright to live the right path. That's good for, that's the eternal good. I mean, the eternal wealth is for the soul. So that's what the first thing he says, sort of. And he says, and also, uvechein hatachlas mivanasam. And the purpose in understanding the words of the wise, this is a great matter. It's a great and important matter. And now he says, and they're like nails that are driven. Therefore, he says, it's difficult to understand them. Just like there's very much toil to remove a nail that's planted in its place. Therefore, King Solomon increased a lot to teach the ways to understand the words of the wise men. All right, so that's the idea about that they're firmly planted. That's what it means. So number one, they're like goads. Goads drive animals. So animals are instinctual. So number one, the words of the wise that we're talking about in verse 11 is in terms of direction of our morals. You see, just like he splits off in verse 10, that King Solomon wrote words of morality and words of truth, so he says also, the wise men also, they spoke about things that address both morality and truths. So morality is like the goads, because that's referring to animals. Animals are instinctual, so to, like, just like we, the animals have to be driven, we have to be driven to control our instincts. So that's one thing. But then he also says the words of the wise are additionally like well-planted nails. What do you mean well-planted? So number one, they're very difficult to extract what their ideas are, because they were brilliant people. Okay, so that's number one. And then it takes a lot of toil. Just like it takes a lot of toil to yank out a nail, it takes a lot of toil to understand a matter. So therefore King Solomon taught a lot in order to bring about a lot of understanding and to unravel the deep ideas of the Torah and the rabbis. But then he says the nails have the big heads, right? And what does he say on this? That he says even though that they are like nails that are firmly planted, so they're like things that have the heads on top, right? And he says Sheesh Barosham Asifos Barzo, that there's a gathering, a collection of steel at the top of the nail. And that through that, you're able, the one who is desirous is able to bring to light certain matters, either with pliers or something else. I mean, he's using a metaphor over here, that although that they're, the words of the wise are like firmly planted, but yet there still is some clues that the rabbis gave us, not to keep us in the dark, meaning they want to give us the tools by which to yank at that nail and examine all aspects of their ideas. So the idea he's giving is like something which is firmly planted. It's deep, and it takes a lot of effort to pull out the truth from the wood, to pull out the nail from the wood. But they gave us a handle by which we can do that, meaning the head of the nail, which gives us the ability to pull out the nail, is the, are the clues, I mean, the ways that the rabbis wrote, they gave us hints along the way, which is how the Torah works as well. It's a very nice metaphor. All right, so that's exactly what you're saying, Nachshon.
So as you pull out the nail, you're exposing the brilliance of the nail itself.
Exactly. So the rabbis didn't write in a way where it's just completely were oblivious to what they're talking about. They wrote because they wanted to share knowledge, but they did it in a way where it would be concealed from the person who's not ready for it, or if it was a deep idea, so naturally a person who's not experienced would not be able to see it just by nature. A person who's not that intelligent is not going to see certain truths. But they also made sure that there was a way to get that nail out. There was a way to unravel the truth. So that's what the head of the nail is. Uh-huh. All right, very nice, huh?
Very, very. But there's all sorts of nails.
Well, we'll just
have... Each one of them has a way of...
Well, it's a basic concept here. We're not going into the more, we're not going any more specific than the illustration that they gave us.
Right.
The one last thing we have to understand. Yeah, what are you going to say, Daryl?
No, I was just going to say, yep, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
I was looking in the wrong direction going in.
Right.
And who is it, Nachshon?
Right.
He just said one comment, and it was, you got to always look at the other aspect of everything. It's a good lesson for me.
Yes.
To look at the other aspect of what we're talking about from a different angle.
Right.
Thanks, Nachshon.
You're welcome.
Now, there's one more thing that the verse takes up. It says that these nails, these goads that were driven, that have these heads on them, they were given from one shepherd. Okay, so whether it means Moshe or whether it means God, meaning the teacher of the Torah. I believe Rashi is one that said that it's God. Let me just see. Okay, Ibn Ezra says it's God. That this wisdom is all given from one God. Well, let's see what Sforno says on this. It seems to be Sforno is also attributing it to God. He says, given from one shepherd, from the shepherd of Israel in his Torah. So within his words are their words. Meaning, I guess, within God's words, the words of the wise. But what is it telling me that it's given from one shepherd? That's the question we have now. What's this final thought, and what's the connection with this verse? Well, what does the one shepherd tell me?
That it's one shepherd, and therefore one shepherd has one flock and one people, and they apply to everybody.
That's not clear. I don't know what you mean. What does that have to do with the verse? The verse here is telling us that the words of the wise are like, and it's explaining, now we understand a bit now why the verse is here, because it's telling us why King Solomon put so much effort into writing and fixing up 3,000 metaphors and teaching the people more than anybody else, because he saw that the words of the wise are like goads, and they're like firmly planted nails. It takes a lot of effort to bring to light their concepts. So that's why he strove so much to elucidate. But then he says one more thing. I mean, in terms of explaining the considerations of why King Solomon went to such lengths to teach. So that's what verse 11 is telling us. What were the considerations that drove King Solomon to put all this effort to teach and not just to teach a lot in terms of the time that he put into it, but how he manufactured and crafted metaphors and thought in to how to give pathways to a human mind to understand the words of the great intellects that preceded him. How are they going to start to develop? So by using metaphor, that's one way. That's number one, that speaks to the person's, you know, repertoire of knowledge, like we said earlier. You can't teach a person with terminology that's unfamiliar to them, so you use metaphor. But another thing about metaphor, like it does in Mishlei, he splits up all the verses. Pretty much every verse, if you go through Mishlei, is in two halves. He says, for example, that the words of the Torah, they'll be like a crown to your head and like a necklace on your neck. So it sounds like it's, you know, it'll be like jewelry, it'll be adornments. But if you stop and you think about it, there's a slight difference. One thing is a crown to the head. Another thing is is something which adorns the neck. And he's trying to show you there's two different parts to wisdom. One is in terms of the intelligence, your head. But neck refers to the source of speech. So the learning wisdom will benefit you intelligently, but also in terms of how you articulate it and share this with others. So on the surface, it might just sound like, you know, the words of the Torah are there. You know, it's like jewelry, crown to your head, the necklace for your neck. You know, a person won't stop and dissect the verse. But he does this pretty much in all the verses because he makes you compare one part of the verse to the second part of the verse. And no two halves of any verse are exactly the same. There's slight nuances, and when you look at them and you compare them, you start seeing differences. And that starts to sharpen your ability to distinguish. That's a very important tool. It's one of the most crucial tools in terms of knowledge. Is that a person has the ability to distinguish X from Y. So a person could, sometimes you can look at a person, one person says he's angry, another person says he's frustrated. So an intelligent person will be able to distinguish anger from frustration. Some people can't. They see one person and they see another person. They say they both look angry. They both have similar expressions. But with fine-tuning your ability to distinguish, then you can see differences. Yeah, what are you going to say, Darryl?
I'm just curious. Maybe the reason it's written in this mode is that he's trying to relate to all different like or works of life. You know, there's shepherds, there's iron makers, there's...
What are you explaining?
The question you had, why is it written in, you know, all these different words, all these different analogies?
I mean, why is it that he gives a verse and it's two halves to the verse? My question right now is, in terms of Mishlei and metaphor, he always talks and he says one part of the verse and then he says the second part, which is slightly different. So I'm explaining that he does that in order to force the person to compare and see the slight nuances. And by doing that, a person sharpens his ability to detect differences. And he can see more subtleties.
Yeah, I was going back to what we were learning from Hollis.
Okay, yeah, we'll get back to that in a second. But I just want to make sure this is clear, why he wrote metaphor. I'm giving a second reason why he uses metaphor. Not only to help draw on the person's repertoire of terminology, but also because metaphor, and when he does it in his style, where he gives two halves of one verse, and he slightly differentiates the second half of the verse from the first half, it causes the person to contrast the two halves, to detect subtle differences, and that sharpens the mind. And that's how he gets the person to be sharper, and that's going to help a person learn. That's his whole goal. All right, so that's why he wrote metaphor. All right, now getting back to here, our question was, why does it say given from one shepherd? Now, you wanted to answer that, Darryl?
No, I just wanted to say the one shepherd, whether it's God or the sages, that you said there was 3,000 metaphors.
That King Solomon wrote, yeah.
Right, so I was just trying to think, why would somebody write that many? And that must be because there's so many walks of people. There's so many likes of people that have different types of work. So if he wrote it all in reference to a blacksmith, maybe the baker wouldn't understand, or something along those lines, or the shepherd wouldn't understand. So he's trying to relate to everybody in the flock, so to speak.
Yeah. You there? Hello? Anybody else there, or did we get cut off? Okay, so I guess he got cut off. He'll have to call back in. Okay. Yeah, he's right. I mean, he definitely, you know, wanted to cover many areas. King Solomon definitely wanted to relate to the whole populace. So it's important to, you know, speak on many different matters.
Is there a tie back to the shepherd and the goat that was originally stated early on?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about right now. What exactly is the concept of bringing this into this verse that is given from one shepherd?
Yeah, I'm sorry. You know, we had a blackout here.
All right.
The block just went out. Sorry about that.
No problem. Yes, yeah, so I think what you're saying is right, Darryl, that you know, King Solomon definitely wants to reach the entire populace, so he speaks about many subject matters. But I think more because there are many topics that are needed to be discussed, and many, you know, not just walks of life, different types of people, but, you know, just for one person, just for an average human being, there's many considerations. So I think that's more primarily. I'm getting feedback again, so just put on the mute buttons. So it's not so much to cater to every individual, you know, type of person, but really every person on earth has the same components, just like everybody has lungs and a liver and a heart. So everybody has all the different, you know, various emotions and attitudes and wishes and aspirations. So that's why he's writing so much, and he's writing so many metaphors, because there's so many different aspects of life, even for a given, one given person. But now, what does he mean by the words of the wise are like goads, are like driven nails that have heads, given from one shepherd? Meaning, what's given from one shepherd is going back to the words of the wise. I'm getting conversations in the background. Can you put on your mute button? Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, maybe you use a different phone. It seems like you don't have a mute button on that. So next time you call, and use a different phone, because it's, I don't think you can have the talking and the hearing going on at the same time with this conference.
Yeah, the phones went out here. Apologize for that. And I don't have a mute on this
one. All right. But I'm just holding it over the speaker. So. Okay.
You hear anything now?
No, that's good. Yeah, I'm just wondering if the concept of one shepherd, meaning attributing all the words of the wise, like driven nails, they're meaning all these concepts or concepts from one shepherd, meaning that there's a unified approach or a unified flavor to the wisdom. When you say it's given from one shepherd, I mean, it also tells you that it's that's coming from God, so it has to be a tremendous amount of knowledge, which is probably more to the point, because he's trying to show the reason why he had to elucidate knowledge so much, because it all traces back. You can't leave God out of the equation, so you have to go back. Ultimately, the reason why King Solomon had to explain so much is because it's coming from the one who created the world. So you're talking about the infinite wisdom here. So that's finally the ultimate reason why the truths of the Torah and wisdom in general have to be elaborated upon. It's not a simple matter. It's coming from the Creator. All right. Yes, I think we'll stop here and think it over. So let me ask if there's any questions or comments at this point. Okay. Let's just think it over. What's that, Daryl?
You're going to elaborate on that during the next question, right?
We can go back over it and you have those questions, but I'll leave it at this point. And but I think that's a clear reason why, and it fits in with what this verse is doing here. This verse 11 is explaining why King Solomon went to such lengths to teach. Because of the way the rabbi spoke, but on top of how the rabbi spoke, and although they gave us clues, nonetheless, all this knowledge emanates from God, one shepherd. So that's why it has to be elaborated on. It's not a simple matter.
Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah. It fits in with the...
It's very wide.
It fits in with the verse. All right, so let's wrap it up here. And we'll pick it up next week, and then we'll wrap that up, and then we'll do the last, I think it's the last two or three verses next week. All right?
All right. Thanks, Rabbi.
Bye. Okay, everybody. Have a good week.
You too.
Thanks.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.